Hello, everyone. Welcome to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with me, Dr. Mary Angela McGuire, on Transformation Talk Radio. During this show, I'll help you practice mindfulness. Most of the principles of mindfulness are very simple, but putting those principles into practice can be devilishly difficult. I'm here to help you become a student of your own mind. I'll share ideas, insights, and tools you can use to release yourself from fearful and negative thinking and live from a place of clarity and confidence. Please join me as we challenge ourselves to change. Nothing But Now starts now. Hi, everyone. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. As you know, the purpose of the show is to support people on their journey toward greater mindfulness, which is the ability to stay present to the moment without judgment. And one of the things I've been talking about lately, given the events that are happening in our country, is the relationship between our habits of mind, those ones that keep us stuck in mindless thinking, and racism. For whites specifically, I want to ask, how is it that a belief in white racial superiority has become so deeply embedded in our consciousness that we have trouble bringing it to conscious awareness and changing it? I want to unearth and change a deeply held belief about white racial superiority, but one of the ways we have to do that is to think about how we feed our minds. What do we consume? One barrier for whites is having very limited and therefore distorted information about and experience with Black Americans. As part of my own mindfulness journey, then, I want to use this platform to disrupt the habits of mind that reinforce white racial superiority. Disrupting those habits means feeding my mind and yours with counter narratives, stories from Black Americans about their, in some ways, ordinary, but in all ways, extraordinary lives. And that's what we're going to do today. My guest today is Mrs. Odette Jackson. Odette and I met several years ago through our volunteer work in Galesburg, Illinois. Odette, welcome to Nothing But Now, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Odette, in our conversation today, you've offered to tell us about your family history, your life as a military wife, including your own civilian career, the role that your faith plays in your life, and your extensive community service, something I've always admired greatly about you. I really appreciate you bringing these topics to our conversation. And as you know, because you've listened to the show before, we start each show with a breathing exercise. So would you join me in that?
Certainly.
Okay, thank you. So folks, we bring conscious attention to our breath so that we can feel calm, we can focus our minds, and we can enhance clarity. So we want to remember that after we inhale, we pause at the top and we try to make the exhalation longer than the inhalation. And we're going to use mindfulness educator Lori Cameron's three deep breaths. So this means for the first breath, we just concentrate on that sensation of the breath coming into and exiting our bodies. For the second breath, we just focus on any part of our body where we're feeling tension and we relax. And then for that third breath, we want to set our intention to be open, to be ready for what comes next, and to be kind to ourselves, perhaps. Those are all good intentions, I think. So let's get started. Breath one, just pay attention to your breath. Breath two, relax. And breath three, set your intentions for this moment. Thanks for doing that with me. So my guest today is Odette Jackson. Odette, would you start by just telling us a little bit about yourself to sort of set the context for our conversation?
Certainly. I was born in Rock Island to Alvin and Arbola Foster. I graduated from Rock Island High School. I also attended Black Hawk College. I married my husband when I was 19, so we've been married for nearly 53 years. We have two sons, Aaron and Scott. I worked for the Air Force. I also worked for the Army. I retired from there after 30 years. I also worked at Knox or at KCCDD, which is working with the developmentally disabled. Mm-hmm. I'm of the Baptist faith. I love the Lord. I volunteered with several organizations to include the Support Group for African American Affairs, Habitat for Humanity, Knox College, Knox Prairie Community Kitchen, Bethesda Missionary Baptist Church, and I'm also a senior usher at my present church, which is Second Baptist Church in Rock Island. I mentored a young man I've mentored him for about 13 years now. Mm-hmm. And my belief is that we should always serve and help those in need.
Okay. Thank you. That's fabulous. I've always said I've only known you since you retired. And I think you seem to me to be busier in retirement than you might have been when you were working full time. You have a very busy life. Is that true?
Yes, very much so.
Very busy, yeah. So Odette, one of the things that we've talked about before a little bit that you've shared with me and that I was hoping you would share with our audience today is something about your family history. Would you tell us about your family history?
I'm the second of seven children. My mother and father actually met at a Baptist convention. My dad is from Quincy, Illinois. My mom is from Clarksville, Missouri. Like I said, they met at a Baptist convention, and that's why I'm the faith that I am. I have six brothers and sisters. Two have deceased. Mm-hmm. My parents were very strong in everything that they did. They protected us so much when we were coming up, mm-hmm. because we are Black, and I came up in the 60s. We lived in the city, Rock Island, and then we moved out in the country, Milan, because of my sister's history. My one sister was developmentally disabled, and mm-hmm. we were sent out there. My father said he thought it would be better for her. We were out there. I went to a country school. Oh. I was first grader, the only second grader, and the only third grader. There were probably between 12 and 15 of us in that school, and at that time, there was no difference. I mean, I was the only Black child there, my sister and myself, and we just felt a part of them. They looked after me, the kids mm-hmm. that were there, and then after I went to the country school, we were sent to the local public school in Milan. That was a bit eye-opening. I was the only Black kid there, too. And the only time that we had a lot of being around other Blacks was in church.
Oh, okay.
We're in a white community, but we went to a Black church. My dad was a superintendent of the Sunday school there, and he indoctrinated all of our beliefs in the Baptist religion. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I've worked all my life, enjoyed mm-hmm. working. I started out as a babysitter, obviously, like a lot of kids my age at about 10. Uh-huh. And I went to St. Anthony's Hospital and I worked in a diet kitchen.
Oh.
And there I went to Illinois Bell. Mm-hmm. I worked for Illinois Bell for a few years. This was right after I got married. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of funny because after Illinois Bell, we were sent to Bergstrom Air Force Base in Texas. And before I got there, I was only 19 or 20. Mm-hmm. I had my supervisor call down there and ask how the race relations were in Texas, because I had. So after that, I worked for the Air Force. I went in after we were moved overseas. We went to England. We were stationed over there. Mm-hmm. And from there, I worked for the government. Mm-hmm. And I came in as a telephone operator.
Oh, okay.
I'd been with the Bell system, and you could not transfer from a Bell system overseas. Oh. So we lived on the economy for almost 3 years there in England. Mm-hmm. We lived in Felixstowe, England, and we commuted back and forth to the base. My husband worked there, and it was probably about 25 miles from where we lived.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a civil service test, and I passed, and I started out on a cord board as a telephone operator with other British operators, and that was very interesting. Plus, there were three British operators and probably about five or six American operators.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, we transferred back to the United States. We went to Little Rock Air Force Base.
Okay.
At Little Rock, I worked for the Veterans Affairs as a telephone operator again.
Mm-hmm.
From there, we went to, where did we go? Stationed in Alaska at Eielson Air Force Base, right outside of Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm.
We were there for 4 years. That was a little different, getting used to the colder climate.
Right.
It was very interesting. I enjoyed being there, and the boys loved being there. They learned a lot, especially about building igloos. They learned to cross-country downhill ski. The temperature there got as far down as 25 below zero because our thermometers wouldn't go any further down.
Right.
4 years. From there, we went to McGuire Air Force Base in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. We were there for 4 years. Mm-hmm. From McGuire, we were sent back overseas, and we lived in England for another 6 years, where we lived on the economy for about 10 months, and then we moved on base. At that particular time, we did not take our youngest son with us. He was 17 years old. Oh. He was going into his senior year in high school.
Oh.
That he did not want to go overseas, because who goes back to their class reunions when they live overseas?
Right.
So, here in Galesburg with his grandparents. They were wonderful. Uh-huh. He graduated from school, and my husband retired in 1996 from overseas in Mildenhall, and I followed him all over. So I've been to all the bases that he's been to. We've had 9 assignments, and we had 11 moves.
Mm.
We came back here in 96 and we retired. We've been here ever since.
In Galesburg. Yes. And if I recall correctly, Bill is no more retired than you are in some ways, right? He's still working.
In some ways, yes, you're right. Because he works for Peoples and a do-it-yourself center or a do-it center. But right now, because of the virus, he's been staying pretty much. However, he goes in at night and he does work. That way he's not involved with anyone else, or he's not involved with the people in the community or anything because of the virus.
That's smart. So Odette, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I love this overview. I'm always amazed when you tell me this story of all of the places that you've lived. And so I'm hoping that when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more in detail about some things about family history, but also some things about all the places that you've lived and what that experience has been like, okay? So, folks, you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and we'll be right back.
Raising the vibrations through stimulating conversations while exploring the mysteries of Atlantis and Lemuria on Tales from the Merworld Radio with me, Amira Beth. Join us every second and fourth Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Be ready to feel empowered and an active part of the changing earth. For more information about me, visit AmiraBeth.com.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. I am so thrilled to be talking to all of you. We have got talk radio for all of us. Are you ready and willing and able to accept all of the abundance you can muster up in your life? Yeah. Check us out at drpatshow.com, transformationtalkradio.com, transformationradio.fm. Oh my goodness.
How do you feel? Just okay? Well, how about you tune in and get ready to be more with The Healing Hour with me, Doc Martin, every third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I'm ready for your questions, and I can't wait to help you find the answers. Every month, we'll have a new live call-in show with innovative topics and a powerful hour of healing. To learn more about me, visit DrSharonMartin.com. See you there. I'm going to be here. You won't want to miss it.
Coming to you live on TransformationTalkRadio.com is The Brilliance Ultimatum, Time's Up with Claudette Rowley. Powerful conversations, practical innovations, and transformative solutions as Claudette and her guests delve into the possibilities and what she calls reality resistance. Join the cultural revolution and annihilate obstacles. Check it out at culturalbrilliance.com.
Tune in to Knowledge Book Radio with host Marge Potasek each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Through many experiences, Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity in its transition to the Golden Age, and it provided the truth and the answers. She now shares information from the Knowledge Book with you each week on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. My name is Mary Angela McGuire, and I'm here with my friend and guest, Odette Jackson from Galesburg, Illinois. So, Odette, you've given us an amazing kind of overview of all of the places that you have lived in your life. Because your husband was in the military, you all traveled quite a bit, but you have lived in, you've lived in England twice, Alaska, Arkansas, Texas, New Jersey, and Illinois. Not sure if I've got all of them, but that's an amazing opportunity to see life in so many different parts of this country as well as abroad. But we were going to go back a little bit and talk about your parents' experience, because there were some features about your parents' experience that were unique. And I think I'm curious about the impact it had on them and the impact it had on you and your siblings and kind of how you see the world and how it helped you or the challenges it presented in terms of dealing with the world. So would you talk a little bit more about your parents' experience?
Sure. My mom is very fair-complected. My father was dark-complected. They met, as I said, at a Baptist convention. They were married, and they were married 10 years before they ever had children. They did a lot of travel. Okay. Not only that, my United States Army, and he was stationed overseas in France.
Oh.
When he came, they started their family. And I can remember as a child, because we used to travel occasionally. There were so many of us, but
right.
This particular, probably about five, maybe six of us. And we would go back and forth to Quincy or down to Springfield. And my mom always packed our lunch. We never stopped and ate at restaurants. And it never dawned on me until I was practically maybe a teenager or a young adult. And it dawned on me at that time, we didn't stop because there weren't places for Blacks to stop. So she always packed us a lunch. And we had our little gathering, our little stopover on the road, and we ate. Mm-hmm. But I remember my mom and my dad when they were first married. And like I said, they were married 10 years before they had children. They used to travel together. And because my dad is dark complected and my mother was very fair, certain places that they would be in, especially Florida, my mom, they would go to the beach and they would tell my mom, well, you can go to the white side. My dad would go to the black side. And my mom said, oh, no, we are not doing that. We are not. We're both black. And that was one of the things. They also traveled a lot. And they were servants. My mom would be maybe the maid. My dad would be the butler. She'd be the cook. He'd be the chauffeur, whatever. But that was how they made a living in the beginning. And I also remember my mom saying, this was kind of funny, that when she was in North Carolina and my dad wanted to go to beauty school, he always mm-hmm. wanted to be a beautician. So she took him to the beauty school. And when he got out of the car, there was all black women there. And this one particular lady said to my mom, you might have dropped him off here, honey, but you ain't taking him home. So at that time, my mother immediately enrolled in the school as well. So they were both had a wonderful childhood. We grew up in the country. I didn't know anything really about poverty because everyone that we knew, all of my family, we all pretty much lived the same. We lived in the country. Mm-hmm. We raised pigs and chickens. And we grew our own produce, and we were always happy kids. We, like I said, we didn't know a lot of the things that were going on in the world as far as race relations.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that one of the things you said initially was that in some ways your family very much protected you, in part by moving out to the country. It was better for your sister, who was developmentally disabled, but it was also, I don't know if it was, do you think it was intentional on your parents' part? Do you think they thought you would?
I definitely think they did it intentionally. And they knew in the back of their mind because of the racial climate at the time and mm-hmm. my sister, it just all seemed to happen at the correct time in our lives. And mm-hmm. it was great. It was really, really a good experience.
Mm-hmm. Was that a big adjustment though for your parents to become farmers? I mean, in the country?
Farm to us, it was a farm. It was a small acreage. It was about 7 acres. My mom in the country. My dad was kind of sick. So my mom did not have a problem with it. She was raised primarily by her mom and her mom and primarily by her grandparents, her grandfather, to survive, how mm-hmm. to put for animals, how to farm, how to live. You know, I mean, it was nothing for us to have my mom go out and string up the chickens and cut their heads off, and we would be butchering chickens. But she learned that from her grandfather,
right?
And it, that was a natural thing for us, but she made all of us do it one time. And that was it. I did it one time and I did not do it.
Uh-huh. Just once, but everybody knew how to do it. Incredibly self-sufficient then. Yeah. As a family.
She taught us that there was no reason for us to be there and not be able to live on the land, even if we didn't.
Right. Right. Did your husband grow up in the country also?
He grew up in the city. In fact, the other day, he was outside and he saw a snake. And who did he call? Me, because I am not afraid of snakes. So I took that snake and I chopped him up, threw him out in the street and had the cars run over him. And he was telling that to his sister. I heard him tell her that. He's like, yeah, if I see a snake, I know who to call. And I'm like, yeah, don't bother me. But occasionally, them in town. Occasionally.
So, your mother would be very proud of you. You didn't hesitate. You just dealt with it. So how did you and Bill meet?
We actually met at a skating rink in Milan back in the day when we first met. Our churches used to have skating parties the first Monday of the month. And so I went, he went, and he's from Galesburg and I was from Milan, and that's like 45 miles away. So that's where I met him.
Oh, okay.
Asked him to skate on a lady's skate, and I really couldn't skate. So, you know, I thought, well, I'll ask him anyway. And I did. And the rest is history.
So you were married before he joined the Air Force. Is that right? Just right before?
We married, let's see, he graduated in August, and we married in January. So I'm sorry, he graduated in June and he went in the Air Force in August and we married in January.
Okay. Oh, so you really kind of started your married life in the military.
Married 10 days and he went to Alaska for a year on a remote assignment. So that was my introduction to the Air Force.
Oh my goodness. Now, did you go with him that first time to Alaska?
Remote assignment. So he came and we moved to Bergstrom Air Force Base in Austin. That's where our oldest son Aaron was born, and from there they sent him on another remote to Korea. So we were separated twice in 3 years.
Oh my goodness, what was that like for you?
Introduction to the Air Force. We used to have a plaque on our wall in the house that said, "Air Force is where the air, excuse me, home is where the Air Force sends you." That was so true.
Because you moved a lot. I mean, that every what, 3 or 4 years, you would say.
I'm sorry, what was your question?
Did you move maybe every 3 or 4 years during?
It was pretty much that until we went to England, and those were they really weren't 6-year assignments, but we extended for an additional time to stay overseas. We were there for a total of 12 years, 6-year assignments, we came back to the States between the assignments.
Okay. You said earlier that when you went to Texas, somebody called you and asked you what race relations were like there. So I'm curious. Given all the places you've lived, I mean, it just gives you kind of a unique perspective on race relations in a variety of places at a variety of times. Would you talk about some of your perceptions about that, some things you noticed, good and bad?
Like I said, I was not really familiar with any type of racial tensions when I was coming up and traveling around. I worked in Illinois Bell, and from there I was sent to Austin, Texas. I wasn't sent. My husband was sent to Austin to Bergstrom. Right. And because I had never experienced anything in the South, I didn't know what to expect. So I asked my supervisor, I said, would you please call down to this particular Bell system of the Southwestern Bell and ask them what the race relations were there. And she did. And she kind of laughed and she told me, oh, that is fine. And I'm like, okay. So we went down there and we were pleasantly surprised at how comfortable it was in Austin.
Okay.
And we were there for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, my husband was sent to Korea, so I came back to Illinois. Mm-hmm. We've experienced being in the South a couple of times. We also lived in Little Rock Air Force Base.
Right.
And I did not experience any problems at Little Rock. Little Rock was very comfortable, too. My only problem with Little Rock was the tornado. We had so many of them coming over the bay. There was race, nothing. Overseas in England, we had fabulous neighbors when we lived on the economy. We lived in a little village called Felixstowe, and our neighbors were fabulous. We had a little older couple that lived next door to us, Mr. and Mrs. Blackford, and they just took to us like a duck in water. Uh-huh. And they pretty much adopted my kids. My kids went to a British school. Aaron, our oldest son, went to a British school for his first year.
Okay.
And accent was so heavy that when my mother came over, she couldn't understand him. And my mother, what did he say? And I'm like, well, he said, what's on? So, but they didn't experience it either. They really didn't. It was fabulous. It really was a good experience. The thing about the military is there's a lot of camaraderie. So you look out for each other. We don't have that in the civilian sector, but camaraderie overseas was great. We always look out for each other.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was curious about. My oldest brother was in the military for much of his career, and he said he felt that in the military, people looked, didn't ignore race, but also didn't discriminate necessarily on that basis, that military protocol took precedence over everything else. But he's white, so of course, he might not notice it. But that was, sounds like that was similar, and Bill's experience was similar too, that the camaraderie, the fellowship, the mission was more important, took precedence.
That's what it was all about.
Mm-hmm. It was the mission.
No, he didn't have that problem either. In fact, when he retired, he was a chief master sergeant as an E9. That's the highest rank that you can go to as a non-commissioned officer. And he mm-hmm. did extremely well. Mm-hmm. And I found him all over the place. So, and the thing about being a military wife, mm-hmm. I did work for them. I had the advantage of wherever we went to as a spouse, we had preference. We had in the beginning. So as long as you were qualified for a particular job, mm-hmm. They put you at the top of the list. So I always worked. I've always had that ability. So I never went without working.
Mm-hmm. You must have gotten to know places much better since you had your own job. You were out in the world too.
Yeah, definitely. We lived in England, like I said, the first time for 6 years, and the people over there were fabulous. We did a lot of traveling while we were in England. I know the first time I went from England to Belgium, it was due to the fact that I had not left the country. And as a spouse at that time, you needed to leave your country once a year in order to drive. Mm-hmm. Well, we were in England, and I was out driving around, and I got picked up for speeding. I used to collect a lot of speeding tickets. Up for speeding, and the officer said, well, I'll have to come to the house to speak to your husband, because he was responsible for me. He was my sponsor.
Right.
So about 3 months later, he finally came by and he talked to Bill about me leaving the country. And so my little boy, Aaron, who was 4 at the time, he and I took a ferry across to Belgium. So from then, I was always ready to travel.
Okay.
So we did. While we were overseas, we went to Belgium and France and Italy and Luxembourg, Holland, all over the place. And it was fabulous. Really, really good.
Oh, that's wonderful. It sounds, yes, it sounds fun. I know you have the travel bug. And all the time I've known you, you've always been a traveler.
And we're stuck at home. So this is the first time I have been stuck at home for 6 months and not gone anywhere.
Oh, it's hard. Well, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about faith and community service. Okay. All right. So we will be right back, folks. This is Transformation Talk Radio's Nothing But Now. Thanks for joining us today. And we'll be right back with more from Odette Jackson. Have you ever wondered how you might feel differently if the books were full of her instead of him? What if your history lesson was filled with powerful women leaders and rulers? As a woman, would you feel more empowered? As a man, would you see women differently? I'm Megan Edge. I'd love for you to join me on my radio show, Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host, Dr. Pat, on Transformation Talk Radio. I hope to see you there.
We remember a time when you could simply form a thought and it would manifest. The harmony was forgotten, but it is returning now. The Power of Inspiration and Awakening Radio with Julia Griffin on TransformationTalkRadio.com each second and fourth Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific will take you on adventures through the heart and spirit, exploring who we once were. This intuitive healer studied under the guidance of wolves, learning from their wisdom to master a higher frequency for a new state of mind. Visit OneTrueSelf.com.
Yeah, yippee-skippy to that, baby. We're not done yet. Some of us are out here to educate and inspire. This year, 2020, is the year. We got it. Show me the money in the cash flow. I'm Dr. Pat. This is the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By.
Visit thedrpatshow.com.
Living a richly abundant life? Sound too good to be true? Listen in to Richly Abundant Women with Julie Steelman on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Embrace a vibrant future of breaking free financially and creating a richly abundant life filled with prosperity and growth. To learn more about Julie Steelman and Richly Abundant Women, visit www.juliesteelman.com.
Get your goddess groove on with me, Laura Hosfor. Tune in every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com, where I offer you authentic channel messages of love, inspiration, and heart healing grace. Get your goddess groove on. When the goddess speaks, everyone listens. For more information, visit LauraHosford.com. That's LauraHosford.com.
For stimulating conversation and keys that will change your life, tune in to Dynamic Destiny with Coach Pete every first and third Wednesday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join Pete to get clarity for your calling and practical wisdom for results. For more about Coach Pete, visit PeteCoaching.com. That's P-E-T-E Coaching.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and I'm here with Odette Jackson, and we've been talking about her life spent in the military as a military wife living all over the country and all over the world, as well as her family background in Rock Island and her parents' experiences, which have been very interesting. They, too, love to travel and lived in many parts of the country. But Odette, one of the things that I know you and I have talked about before and I know is very central to your life, and as you've mentioned, was central even from the time your parents met, literally, is faith. I know you're a Baptist. And I wondered if you'd talk a little bit about maybe what that meant to grow up with such a strong faith tradition and how you see faith working in your own life now.
Yes, faith has always been a part of a part of my life. I mean, I was born, raised, baptized, and married in the same church. So one of the things that we were talking about, someone had mentioned actually yesterday, was a faith that cannot be tested is a faith that cannot be trusted.
And oh, I saw that.
That's very true. Our faith gets tested daily. I mean, you know, this morning I woke up and I was in a great mood. I had prayed last night before I went to bed. I prayed first thing in the morning when I get up. And the first thing I did after I prayed was I had listened to Representative John Lewis's favorite song, which was Happy. And I played Happy. But our faith is tested daily. And it's, like I said, if it's not tested, then it can't be trusted. I can remember one time when faith came right into my life where I was tested on the job and someone had accused me of something that I didn't do. Ooh. And I prayed about it. And the Lord answered my prayer. And he not only cleared me, he almost got this lady fired because she had lied about something that I did.
Right.
They started my career off in a different direction because at that time I was a telephone operator. And from that, I took I went for an interview and this man hired me as his secretary. And at the time I could just barely type. And he used to laugh and tell people, he'd say, "Does your secretary type?" And they'd say, "Yes." And he'd say, "Well, mine doesn't always, but most of the time she does." So I always found that a little humorous, but my faith is tested daily. I mean, if the devil tries to get in, and you just have to say, "No, we're not having that. Not here. Not now. You don't have any. You have no choice in my life. You have no foothold in my life. God has always guided me, directed me."
I'm really. I love that you started with that. I assume it's a quote, but I don't know who it's from. Of, you know, a faith that that isn't tested can't be trusted, because sometimes I think when people are raised in a strong faith tradition, I wonder sometimes, are they taught that it's okay to to question, to acknowledge that, yeah, it's going to be tested. It's not always going to be easy. Were you raised to believe that your faith would be tested?
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, you know, it's just a part of life. You can't go through this life and it be easier or even keel. If it's not tested, something is wrong. My dad, he would test us sometimes and put us on, we weren't really put on trial, but he would ask us about certain things in our life, if we believed in this and if we believed in that. All of us are not, we're all Christians, but we're not of the same faith in my family.
Oh, okay.
Methodist. We have one that's a Jehovah's Witness, and there's different ones in us. But I think that as long as we believe and we trust the same God, that's what's important. That's what's okay. Important.
Okay. When you say faith is tested daily, what do you mean?
From the time you get up. This morning I got up, and I felt great from the moment I got up. That's how I knew the Lord was on my side. I had prayed last night before I went to bed that things would go smoothly. He woke me up this morning. He didn't have to. I have lost 5 friends in the last 2 weeks. Not friends, but he woke me up this morning. So I'm saying. So he woke me up. He started me on my way. I'm not in any pain. Nothing bothered me. Like I said, I start singing happy first things. That's what I am. I'm just happy to be alive and happy to express the fact that he is the head of my life.
Mm-hmm. Some people, my gosh, 5 losses in 2 weeks, that's hard to imagine. Some people feel very tested by those kinds of losses. Do you?
No, I really don't. I don't. We're all here, we live, we have to die. We just have to be ready and prepared for what's going to happen to us. We don't know when the time is going to be. I don't know when the time is going to be, but I want to make sure that whatever I do, that it's pleasing to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Be pleasing to him.
Mm-hmm. How do we know though? How do you know if you're doing the right thing?
I don't always. Mm-hmm. I don't always. And I know when I'm not doing the right thing because it'll backfire. It'll be something. You know? And it's not always subtle. Sometimes it does kind of hit you in the face and you know that you've done something you shouldn't, but you pray about it and God forgives you and you can continue on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that because you feel God's forgiveness, does it allow you to be, one of the things I like to talk about on the show is compassion, which I think is related to forgiveness. So you feel God's forgiveness. Do you think that it allows you to have a more forgiving attitude towards others?
Yes, it does. I mean, he forgave me, so I have to forgive others. If mm-hmm. I can't forgive, how will others forgive? I know, you know, many years ago, my brother was murdered when he was 41. Oh. And my mother went to the trial of these individuals that were accused of his murder. They were found guilty. But one of the things my mother said was, I forgive them. And we had to forgive. If we didn't forgive them, God wouldn't forgive us.
Wow. But how did, okay, I just have, that's hard to imagine. I mean, I read about people who do that. I don't know that I've ever met a person who suffered that kind of loss and that kind of violence and was able to forgive. Was it hard?
It was for, I think, the kids, for my brothers and sisters, but it wasn't for my mother because she was very strong in the faith too.
Mm-hmm. And it was, she saw that immediately, do you think, that she wanted to forgive? I'm sorry.
She did not see it immediately, but she wanted to forgive, and she did. She forgave in the courtroom, and one of the guys had said to her, "This is Foster, I'm so sorry." She said, "I know you are." And she said, "But I forgive you." So that's how we were.
Mm-hmm. I just think about what a relief that was for his soul, for her to forgive him.
I'm sure it was, but it was more of a relief for her, my mother. She did, and she told all of us that this is something that we have to do.
Mm-hmm. That's quite a test of faith, though.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So, and you're very active in your church, is that right?
Right now, of course, with COVID-19, we can't be, but we do Zoom with the church my Sunday school, and then we go to our website and listen to our pastor give us our sermon and our information for the day. And he is a great man. I really enjoy him. I've learned a lot in my Sunday school lesson too that we do over Zoom. We have a fabulous class, and it's very enlightening. You learn something every day. In fact, that quote, a faith that can't be tested is a faith that not to be trusted, was from someone in my Sunday school class.
Oh, that's great. Well, please thank them for me. I just really appreciate that.
Go ahead.
Asked
a question, and that was what she said. She said, "This is very true." And I thought it was very appropriate yesterday when she said it. It was at the right time. And I thought, yeah, our faith is tested daily.
Mm-hmm.
But if it can't be tested, then it can't be trusted. We have to say, well, if this is going to happen, I have to be prepared. I have to know. So, yes, I trust my faith all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was it challenging to find places to worship in England, in Alaska, and were you able to find a church that suited you?
Pretty much. Most of them were on base. However, when we went to England the first time, we were out and I met my neighbor, and it was very funny how we met. He lived two doors down, and he came over and he introduced himself and he said, "I'm Reverend Short, and I live in that house over there." And I said, "You live in that house over there?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "I thought that was a pub because of the light." There was this red light on his back door.
Uh-huh.
So after that, our kids met and they had a great time. And so I went to his church. It was the Church of England, and it was just a block or so up the street.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed in contact with each other for probably about 20 years.
Oh, my.
And when my husband and I celebrated our 25th wedding anniversary, we had our vow renewal in England, and we had this particular vicar. He was British, and we had an American minister that renewed our vows.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's really great.
No, we're finding places to worship, no.
Okay. All right. That's great. We're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we're going to wrap up by talking about, and I know that faith leads probably directly to your community service work, but we're going to come back and talk about the work that you're doing in your community. So thanks, Odette. We'll be right back. This is Mary Angela McGuire on Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Stuck in a roundabout of dysfunction? Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Aubert. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Aubert. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyaubert.com. That's drkathyaubert.com.
Hi, this is Kimberly Carlson, and I would love for you to tune in to All In Healing Radio, where together we will begin to experience health, happiness, and harmony in all areas and aspects of life. Join us every first Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. on TransformationTalkRadio.com. All In Healing will help you release layers of negative beliefs and energies for radiant health, deep joy, and greater abundance. Visit me at KimberlyCarlson.com.
Are you ready to awaken to your divine and true potential? tune into A Spirited Exchange Radio with me, Carrie Kadambi, every second and fourth Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. We discuss the evolution of the modern mind and how the power of awakening, healing, and connecting allows us to step into living a life of love in action. For more information about me, visit thedivineguidancegift.com.
Get your goddess groove on with me, Laura Hosfor. Tune in every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com, where I offer you authentic channel messages of love, inspiration, and heart-healing grace. Get your goddess groove on. When the goddess speaks, everyone listens. For more information, visit LauraHosford.com. That's LauraHosford.com.
Welcome back to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and I'm here with Odette Jackson. We've been talking about her fascinating life history, travel all over the world, living in so many different places, and all of the ways in which that's had an impact on her life and the way she views the world. But I think what I've really appreciated about our conversation is the way, Odette, that your faith is certainly the through line, right? The consistent given all the different places you've lived, the experiences you've had, the places you've worked, but your faith has been the consistent pattern through all of that. And I know that it also informs another part of your life, which is the work you do in your community. So is that true? In fact, is that what motivates you to do work in your community in part, at least, is your faith?
Yes, my faith is my cornerstone.
Mm-hmm.
Volunteered for Habitat for Humanity for quite a few years. I know when we came back here, I wanted to do something with them, and I didn't know who to get in contact with.
Right.
But my husband had spoke to Jim Eklund when he was at work, and Jim mentioned it, and so he got in contact with me. He was the executive director at that time. And so I talked to him for a while, and he asked me if I wanted to help, and so I did. But I wasn't doing what I wanted to do. I was the secretary for Knox County for about 5 years. That was not what I wanted to do. I wanted to get hands-on experience, you know, get out there with the people in the community. So after a few years, I did finally start working in the community, working on the houses. And it's a fabulous experience. We work from the ground up. I brought in one of my grandchildren even to help me with that. He wasn't too happy about that because we were actually putting P-rock foundation after the hole had been dug. And that's a lot of work, man. And I said, if I can do it, you can do it. So we started from the ground up, and we worked on that house. He lived with us for the summer. We worked on that house and one other. And it's helping other families, other people, you know, that are a little less fortunate than you. They have the same desires, the same wants, the same needs as everybody else. And it's a very rewarding organization.
Oh, I'll bet. So satisfying to do that work.
Very much so. I also worked with the support group for African American Affairs, which my sister-in-law, Stephanie Grimes, is pretty much the president of that. She is the president of that. And we've done a lot in the community with that because there are a lot of things that we need to do for our own people. Mm-hmm. And we have scholarships, and we have events throughout the year, not very many, mostly around the summertime when we have our annual day where we give out the scholarship, also working with Juneteenth.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've also worked with KPCK, one of my favorites. That's the one I'm involved with right now, amongst the others. But it's so rewarding to be able to help someone. And they're not all in need, the people that come to KPCK, but we're there to provide a service. We have a free meal twice a month, and we also give away a food giveaway. And like I said, it's not for anyone that's necessarily in a bad time, but it was also a good reason or a good way for them to fellowship with the rest of the community, you know.
Right.
It's been extremely rewarding. I thoroughly enjoy that. It's something that we as Christians are supposed to do. You're always supposed to be a servant of the Lord and help other people.
Mm-hmm. You also have mentored a young man down in Peoria for many years.
he was my neighbor when, and he came to me one time when he was about maybe 9 or 10, and he just happened to be on my porch one day, and he said he needed something to drink, and so I gave him something to drink, and I gave him some food. Then he went away, and then he'd come back. I'd wake up some mornings, and he'd be on my porch. So he wasn't put into foster care, but he was put into care for children that have some problems. His mother couldn't take care of him at the time, and his father really wasn't in his life. But he was living in Peoria, and I started back mentoring him. I found out where he was because I'd lost contact. I didn't know where the child was, and I found out where he was. So I mentored him for quite a number of years. He was probably about 13 when I first started back with him, and he couldn't read. I just had not heard of a child not reading. He's dyslexic, and he had other problems. But through a lot of prayer, and I started him reading. He still does not read very well, but I started him on a children's Bible, and that's where he started reading. And he loved the Lord. He was just very confused about a lot of things, but it helped him out. He needed to read. He still does not read very well. But it was astounding to me that he got passed through the system through all those years, never taught him how to read.
Mm-hmm. Right. And didn't have a person in his life really until you showed up who could bring that consistent attention and care and concern.
Well, I'm sure that mother would have liked it, but the best we could. I mean, you know, and he was very, he wanted to learn, but he has so many disabilities.
Go ahead.
He's a good kid, and he now lives in Galesburg.
He
actually lives in one of the developmentally disabled homes, and he's not too, I still see him quite a bit.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I don't know if you've been able to do this with COVID, but I know when I lived in Galesburg, you often, you visited people who were sick, shut in, et cetera. How's that? Have you been able to do that now?
Well, actually, no. And I was thinking about this one particular lady this morning, and I thought, I've got to call her. But I did talk to her husband the other day, and he said that I could come and visit her Wednesday. So we will be going out and doing that. And the person that I visit with, my good friend Joyce Taylor, she goes and I go. And we also had a third individual, Dolores Kelly, but Dolores died back in March. So two of us. So that was kind of hard losing Dolores, but the three of us used to go out and visit the sick and shut in. And Joyce does it more so than I do because she works in the community.
Right.
With a lot of people. So she's more able to visit than I do.
But where does that come from? I mean, you're the only person. I'm sorry?
Compassion. You know, I think everybody has a degree of compassion, but you want to help as many people as you possibly can. You really do. And you'd be surprised the people that are home that have nobody. So we try to visit when we can. We used to visit the nursing homes. Well, we can't do that anymore, or the people that are in the hospital. So we have one particular lady that we absolutely love, and we try and see her as much as possible.
Okay. It's such a full life, Odette. I still sort of marvel at all you're able to do, and all of the people whose lives you've touched. And we haven't even mentioned very much. I mean, we've talked briefly, but you have two sons and six grandchildren. And I know this has been a little bit of a tough spring because there were a lot of graduations that you weren't able to attend this year with your grandchildren.
Yes, we were supposed to have attended my granddaughter, my son's graduation, and my other grandson. We had one grandson graduated from Texas Tech. My son graduated from the Southern Indiana University, and my granddaughter from high school there in Maryland. So we missed all of those. But, you know, it is what it is.
It's a test of faith, right?
Definitely.
Exactly. Odette, it's been really wonderful to talk to you today and to just appreciate and see just the rich tapestry of your life and all of the adventures and opportunities that you've had. And I thank you so much for sharing them with us. Is there any something you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
Yes. Out of Colossians 4 and 6, it says, "Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that ye may know how ye ought to answer every man.
Will you read it to us again? That's just beautiful.
It's Colossians 4 and 6. Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that ye may know how ye ought to answer every man.
That is beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Francie.
Oh, yes. And I miss you, by the way. Just feel the need to say. I miss seeing you and the Knox Prairie Community Kitchen crew. So, okay. Well, everyone, thank you so much for joining us today. And we'll be back next week on Nothing But Now. I don't know what we're going to talk about, but it'll have to do with mindfulness and practicing mindfulness so that we can bring to conscious awareness those habits of mind that get in our way and that prevent us from having the kinds of thoughts that allow us to really see people for who they are and not be distracted by old beliefs that are getting in our way and that aren't helping us. So thank you again for joining us. And Odette, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Be at peace, everyone. Thank you.
You've been listening to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with Dr. Mary Angela McGuire on Transformation Talk Radio. Join me next time as we continue to practice mindfulness and challenge ourselves to change. If you'd like to find out more about my work or contact me, please go to my website, McGuireLifeCoach.com. That's McGuireLifeCoach.com. See you next time.
The music for Nothing But Now was created by Salt Theory.
Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.